Oh, hello. Welcome to the Josh Holiday Show for January 10th, 2010. I like to call it 2010, not 2010. 2010. I don't know why there's debate on this. When it was the 1900s, way back in 1910, I used to call it 1910. As I drove... No, did they have cars then? I'm getting sidetracked. If you are not hearing this on Sunday night... At 9 p.m., if you're listening right now and it's 9 p.m. on Sunday night, January 10th, 2010, then you're likely hearing it on TalkRadioX.com. That's where the show debuts every Sunday night, 9 p.m., hour-long show. And shortly thereafter, it pops up at JoshHolidayShow.com, and then it becomes available on iTunes, so you can listen at your own pace, your own convenience, whatever the case might be. Last week we talked of a few things that have seemed a few of the things we talked about last week have picked up some steam since we last spoke. I talked about how the Phil Kessel deal with the Leafs was a dud, and between now and then in that last week, still no more goals for Phil Kessel, and he was even called out by Coach Ron Wilson this week. We talked about the Pepsi chant, and it looks like now there's even Facebook groups starting and all sorts of people who think that the Pepsi chant is dumb, as do I. A-O, Canada go. I don't think so. How about just Canada, Canada, or go Canada, go Canada, whatever. But we don't need to be told by a multinational pop company how to cheer our teams. And we also talked about Harper and how he's prorogued Parliament for the second time in his career as Prime Minister, and that too has picked up a ton of steam. There's all sorts of protests planned, and I think this time around people are actually doing something about it. Last time it was like, this doesn't seem right, but they let him get away with it. But now they're realizing, this guy is kind of a creep and is taking advantage of the population and is acting dictatorial-like. So that's that. If you want to, you can go back and check out all the episodes. They're all on iTunes, and they're also at joshholidayshow.com. So if you want to catch up, go there and check it out. And we always appreciate your comments. I would love to get your emails. Let me know if there's something you want to talk about. You disagree with something. That's totally fine. It's an open discussion. But let's talk about today's show. A couple things we're going to talk about on the show today. Man's search for the ideal washroom. I think it's a men thing. We got to find, especially for, not for just the taking out the hose and emptying the bladder, but for the actual sit down. Men, I think I am, and I know I came to know that other people are a little bit fussy about where they do their sit down business when it comes to pooping. We'll have some comedy. I think I'm going to play some David Cross. Might sneak in a telemarketing call for you. We will talk about hockey a little bit, maybe talk about the Leafs. First up, want to talk about dating. I haven't really talked about that on the podcast thus far, and even on the blog, I haven't really talked about it. I think partly because... here's my story. I'll bring you up to date on my story. I was living in Calgary for 2 years, hosting a radio show out in that province, in the city of Calgary. It was an afternoon drive radio show, and that ended. So I moved back to Toronto from Calgary in March. And out in Calgary, I owned a condo out there, and before the real estate market had sort of tanked, so I didn't want to sell it when I left, so I ended up renting it out furnished for a little while so that the real estate market could bounce back, and finally ended up selling it in November, and so that's all done with there. But in the meantime, when I came back here in March, I for a number of reasons took the walk of shame and move back in with my folks. It's not a terrible situation. They have a decent-sized house, and I have the third floor to myself. It has a decent-sized bedroom, a den, a washroom, so there's a little bit of privacy that way, but it's not by any means an ideal situation, particularly when it comes to the world of dating, because that, for 90% of women, I think the living at home thing is a bit of a deal breaker. And rightly so in most circumstances, although I'm not so sure it should be a blanket thing, because there's different circumstances for why people do it. In my case, it was the fact that I was renting out my place in Calgary, so I had a place already there that I was looking after. And B, in the radio industry, you kind of have to be ready to move, to go to another city. And so when I first came back here, I was sort of like, all right, I might have to go to, I don't know, Ottawa or wherever the good job takes you. So that was sort of through the summer. And now things seem a little more settled here in Toronto, and so I'm making the leap. I'm going to, I've already got a place for February 1st. So I'm excited about that. Let's see what happens. I mean, I'm still thinking, well, I may have to move if a decent radio gig comes up. But in the meantime, I can't just hang out here at my parents' place. It's just, it's enough. In any case, yeah. So February 1st, I will become I will live by myself, which I enjoy. I like my privacy. I like to be, have my space. And my parents are nice people, but I need my space. And also, in the dating world, yeah, it's just for all many, many reasons not to be living at home. And it's actually, I'm going to be living in the building that is right next to a building I lived at when I first moved out of the house oh so many years ago. Totally correct. I actually, when I first moved out of the house, I moved down to Los Angeles for just under a year on some sort of work visa thing. But the first Toronto apartment I had was near Bloor and St. George. And the new building I'm in is basically the building next door to the old building I'm in. So it's my old stomping grounds. And the annex is an area that I spend a lot of my time there, and it's an area I like. So I'm kind of glad to be back there, because I did have a habit of always buying or renting places that were near where I worked. And I think part of it is that, I was so excited about the job that I wanted to be close to it. Part of it, too, was I just enjoy being within a walking distance of my workplace. So I don't have to worry about commuting or driving or parking or any of that stuff. I have a car, but the less I have to use it, the better. And so there was a temptation this time around. When I was living in Calgary, I lived within like a block and a half of where the workplace was. But in that situation, it was actually a decent location all around. It was right in the nice part of the city. When I worked at The Edge in Toronto, got a place within like two and a half blocks, and that was not bad too, especially sometimes doing overnights when you would be walking home at 5:30 in the morning. It was just nice to be close, walking home as the sun would come up. This time around, though, I have a few sort of gigs on the go, doing some work for CBC, which is down at Front, close to Spadina, and doing some TV stuff at a place that is south of Kipling and the QEW, so sort of the West End. And the temptation at first was, oh, you know what, I should get a place, down in the west end of the city. And I was thinking, Front and Spadina and Lakeshore, because there's a ton of condos that have been developed there. But then I got to thinking that, well, in that case, I would be, it would be a work thing, but not so much a lifestyle thing, because that area, though there's tons of condos and stuff built up, there's still not a lot of culture or grocery stores or movie theaters. It seems in terms of things that cater to the new population there, it seems a little underdeveloped in my opinion. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to move to where I like to hang out, in an area I love, and it's very central. So yeah, Bloor and St. George, that's where I will be. Which brings me to dating. It was a long, circuitous route we took to get here, but so be it. Since I've been back from Calgary, living in Toronto, I've been on sort of a dating hiatus. Part of it just, you know, my mind has been occupied with other things, and I just haven't really put the effort into it. And part of it is the whole living at home thing. It's kind of not embarrassing, but it's certainly not a great start. So maybe I'll move into that world again. I have been on in the past, and just in general since I've been back, I've been on the Plenty of Fish, which is a dating website, a free dating website, plentyoffish.com, and I haven't really gone on any dates from there. It's mostly been about browsing. Once in a while, I'll send an email here and there, more sort of a witty little blah, 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 trying to be clever, but nothing too romance related or, hey, we really got to get together, just kind of checking things out. And I haven't, because my profile is set to browse women, that's what I'm interested in, I don't really see any guys' profiles. And I don't have a desire to either. But you can kind of get an idea of what some of the profiles are like by what's posted in the female profiles. Often the women are like, well, I don't want to, I don't care, you know, I don't want to see pictures of you with your shirt off or in front of your car or that type of thing. So I get the impression that a lot of the guys on there are kind of these buff, douchey guys who are trying to hit on girls. Lots of dumb guys. Although, to be fair, I'm sure there's some interesting people on there as well. But women do still seem to, on the surface, and that's a problem with online dating, is that's, to begin with, that's what you get. Like, it's about a picture and a quick blurb. There's no real, hey, let's see what's going to happen here. And a lot of times women, not all of them, but are attracted to the douchebag, which in the old days, I guess, was called the bad boy type. But now I guess it's bad boy / douchebag. It's a great website, hotchickswithdouchebags.com. They actually, Jay Lewis, the guy who created it, put out a book as well. And it's a very funny site, kind of chronicles in pictures, real life situations where people submit pictures of hot chicks with douchebags. Although some of the pictures of the hot chicks with douchebags, the women are rather douchey as well. So it's kind of like couples that are made for each other. But in some cases, it's like incredibly douchey, Ed Hardy clad, sideways hat, chin strap wearing guys with girls who would think, wow, what? Why? You've been kidnapped. So if you're on a website, a dating website, and you're different, maybe you read books, you're smart, you have a shaved head and colored glasses, it's a little tougher. I think women also want conventional. In any case, I now have a place to call my own. And while we're on the topic of dating, I'm also a... it's kind of sad to admit this, but I'm a fan of dating shows. And the more psychologically traumatizing the shows, the more I watch. I think it's more like that, you know, you drive by a car accident and for whatever reason you're just compelled, you can't look away. There's a show that I was on this past week, and from what I understand, it was a one-off, and they were going to see how it did and then determine whether or not to make more of them. And it was sort of the shows get more and more concept heavy, and a lot of times the concept is also in the title. In this case, the show was called Conveyor Belt of Love. If you ever wanted to find your love on a conveyor belt, then this show is for you. The basic idea is that there are five women who are sitting down on sort of a stage area. And about 20 feet in front of them, there's what looks like a stage that has a conveyor belt that runs right across the middle of it. And I think there's like 50 dudes. And one at a time, the dudes come out on this conveyor belt, And the conveyor belt stops, and they get off, and I think they have about a minute or so to try and impress these girls. And the girls say interested or not interested. And if they're interested, then the dude they're interested in goes to the specific girl's little spot to the side of the stage. And then if two girls... I'm telling you the concept of a dating show. Good times. If two of the girls are interested, then it becomes the guy who's got to choose the girl he's interested in. But it was just interesting in a sociologically... it was interesting in a sociological way, just in terms of who picked who. On the panel of girls, there was one girl who was sort of the Paris Hilton type, very shallow, not so bright. And she picked a really kind of a buff tan dude with a bad rug and stuck with him the whole, and he had a little dog, just like the total douchebag. And no, I guess a perfect couple, because she was incredibly shallow and incredibly stupid. There was a Christian woman, pretty, but with values, and another more businesslike Hispanic woman. She was pretty, and a more kind of Jersey style girl, a busty blonde, and then sort of the artsy indie chick who was, if I had a choice, that would be the one that I would go for. She's a really, really pretty girl. And on an intellectual level, she also seemed to be interested in quirky stuff, music and books and comic books, that type of thing. So it was interesting to watch what these girls would choose, because you would assume that they would have types. And then sometimes people would roll on the conveyor belt, and they just because of a look, then they would totally abandon what they were actually looking for in a type and pick the person. But it was an interesting show, nonetheless. Another show that I saw recently, I'm not really embarrassed. I enjoy some of these shows, but another one where the whole idea of the show is in the title is a show called Dating in the Dark. I think they had like four episodes of it, and basically they had three guys, three girls, and they would meet for dates in a completely dark room, like no light at all. So there's no, you can even see like the shadow of features and see if indeed people could get to know each other or fall in love without seeing each other. And in most cases, once they saw the person, they were like, oh, you know what? No. All right. And someone else going to talk. Oh, the other another show I wanted to talk about, in the same vein, and one I really, really liked it, and I don't think many people have really heard of it. It was syndicated, hosted by some radio guy, Chris Jagger, who I think worked in Dallas radio. But it was like the show that I really liked, because it was just so tense and psychologically interesting, and sometimes it was hard to watch. The basic concept was they would bring a couple on the show who were in a relationship. They'd reach sort of the point in the relationship where they were like, well, we're at the turning point. It's either should we stay together and make this a real thing for a long term, or have we gotten to the point where, well, maybe it's time to split this apart? So they were at the fork in the road, and this show exacerbated that fork in the road. They would bring the couple on, but not before they would find out what each member of the couple liked. So the guy, oh, I'm into football and blah, 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 and the girl's into whatever, whatever. And they would find someone who was a perfect match on paper with the person's interests and type, even down to physical things. And they would send them out separately on dates. So the girl would go out with a brand new guy who is suited to her professionally, like picked to suit her specifically. And the guy would go out with a girl who is specifically suited to her. And then the couple would come on the show and they would talk about their dates and what they discovered. And then the dates who they had gone out on the dates with would come out and sit beside each other. And it was incredibly uncomfortable but compelling television. It was amazing to see, because sometimes, in a lot of cases, one of the people in the couple wanted to stay together, but the other person in the couple decided that, well, I kind of like this new person. And you're basically seeing couples break up with each other on live TV with the element of, oh, here's a brand new person that's making me break up with you. Whereas in real life, if someone starts seeing someone else, you rarely find out about it. They just say, ah, it's not you, it's me. But that was a show. I don't know why. I think it's the social psychologist in me that enjoys this type of thing. But I did. Change of heart. Yes. And other ones I like. Temptation Island, again, where they get couples and try and test them. And then the old classic Blind Date, which is forever in syndication with Roger Lodge. Anyway, back to dating websites. I went off on a tangent there about dating shows. The old dating websites. You got your regular plentyoffish.com, which I have a profile on, but just kind of browse around. There's Lava Life is another one of the big ones. It's pay, as is Match. And then there's these niche websites, which become kind of interesting. There's one called Date the Rich. And that one I've only become aware of because if I'm browsing on the Plenty of Fish, there's a an ad on there. And there's a few different ones for this Date the Rich website. And they have a picture of the dude, like a headshot of the dude who's supposed to be the rich guy. And for the most part, it looks like angry 50-year-old men who maybe are A-types and might, if you push them, get angry and hit you. I'm like, really? Is that the kind of guy that rich or wealthy is looks like? I'm going to put the picture up on the blog, joshholidayshow.com, so you know what I'm talking about, because it is a visual thing. But the guy's got kind of piercing eyes. He's unshaven, but he looks like a guy who has a temper. And he looks like an asshole, basically, from the picture. He could be the sweetest, gentlest guy in the world, but from this picture, he looks like an asshole. So I guess you got to be kind of shallow to be like, oh, I want to take the rich. But do you really, is this the guy that you want on the ad for the Dating the Rich? I'm not sure. Angry men with piercing eyes. And another website that I've come across partly by accident. I'll bring you a little backstory here. A couple of years ago, was doing some corporate events, like entertaining type stuff, and there was a girl who was part of our corporate events who was call her Cheryl because that's her name. I won't give you her last name, but pretty girl, a very attractive, conventionally attractive girl, kind of flaky. Just seemed kind of like, I don't know if it's like a smart thing or just flaky. I think she was in university at the time. But that was that. She was kind of a hot girl and had lost track of her. I finished doing that gig, was out in Calgary. And then this past summer, I was at an audition. And she was there as well. Not for the same role, obviously. It's actually on TV now. It's the ad for Proline where the dude wants to join the cheerleaders for hockey. I can't remember what the name of it is, but I could have been the guy with the short tank top and the earmuffs asking if I can join the cheer girls. Anyway, she was at that audition as well, and we caught up briefly. And then I thought, I wonder what Cheryl's been up to. So when I got home, I did the Google thing. And the only thing that came up was her name. And it was a quote in an article that was talking about a website. The website is called, I think it's Beautiful People. It's Beautiful People something. I don't know if it's .net or .com. If you really want to find it, I suppose you could Google it. And Cheryl was interviewed in relation to this particular website. And here's what it said in the article. As of last week, Cheryl, a business student from Toronto, said her last name there, is part of that gorgeous group. Quote, I don't feel too bad about it. Everybody has their own clubs, no matter what they are, right? And in every single club, there is elisticism to some to some extent. Elitism. She is trying to say elitism or something along those lines. Anyway, it's not a word. And it says, Myers currently dating someone and only joined beautiful people for networking purposes. But if she were single, the 24-year-old says she wouldn't date a man with a fabulous personality if she didn't find his appearance attractive. And now this website has actually been in the news recently. And I think it's more of a press thing for them because it was basically saying, oh, over the holidays, some people ate too much and beautiful people has kicked 15,000 people off their website because they are no longer beautiful. And this is, where do you start with something like this? I think that is the opposite of beauty. Even though the website is called Beautiful People, I would say that the people on the website are the exact opposite of beautiful people. Someone beautiful isn't just physically attractive. Beauty is an all-encompassing thing. Someone who has a personality, has empathy, is attractive in their own way. It's not just a conventional thing. I think they should rename the website Conventionally Attractive Shallow People Seek Same.com. I mean, there's a total irony because if you're joining that site right away, you're not beautiful. Someone who's a deep, caring, beautiful person would be offended by a site like that and would not join, would be offended by it. So I would hazard to say that not a single beautiful person is on that site, despite the name of the site. It's a site for narcissists. I guess if you want to date narcissists or stuck-up douchebags or hollow people, that's the place to go. And maybe that confirms things about Cheryl. I have no idea, but it's very, very sad. Because I find in general, I'm generalizing here, not so much about the site, but in a lot of cases, people who are what you might term conventionally really good looking tend to not have as strong or as interesting personalities because as they've grown up, they've gotten by so often on their looks, they haven't had to develop any kind of personality. There's been very little adversity. They've just gotten by on looks, so there wasn't any reason to or any incentive to develop their personality. In any case, I should try. I think this is it was started in. I'm just looking at a newspaper article. I think the concept was started in LA, and I think they have franchises globally for this website in different locales. But I should try and get an interview and put someone on the spot, maybe one of the founders. They have the picture, and they're total douche nozzles with the faux hawks and the fake tan. It's quite interesting. All right. Well, enough of dating talk. I'm going to play you some comedy from David Cross. His album, It's Not Funny, and we'll come back and chat some more. Here is David Cross. Enjoy.
So I saw an ad this is like a week ago. I saw an ad on TV for electric scissors. Fucking, yeah. You know what I'm talking about? The electric scissor ad. Fucking, that's crazy. When is this shit gonna stop? This is all the trying to invent these things that are, able to save us time what's next? Like nuclear-powered thought glasses or some shit like that? I mean, I don't know. It's like, ostensibly, an electric scissor is, basically because, it saves you the trouble of this. Ow, fuck. Ow, fuck. Fuck me. Ow, that fucking hurt. Oh. I can't even mime it. All right. Now I understand. All right, I get it now. I'm going to do the rest of the show from down here. That, I get it. Oh, there's got to be a better way. That's just ridiculous. It's really getting a bit much, ostensibly it's to save time, I think. It's a time saver, and then because it'll save you over 2.7 seconds. And, that shit adds up. That shit adds up, By the end of your life, and you're ready to die and they're coming to, death quietly and nurturingly takes you by the hand and says, it's your time. And you'd be like, but I used electric scissors for 40 years. All right, well, you got another 3.5 minutes then. Oh, goody. What should I do? I don't know. It's your 3.5 minutes. You saved it up. Oh. I'm ready now. Yeah. There's not. I know. There's. I mean, so this pursuit of, you know, saving time and that, you know, and like, hey man, I just saved, you know, 20 seconds, man. That's 20 seconds I got to more to jerk off to internet porn. And I got broadband, so I'm saving even more time. It's awesome. What a wonderful futuristic society we live in. You know, and there's some guy in a shed right now, you know, trying to invent, like, you know, a battery-operated battery installer. Never worry about installing your batteries evermore with this battery-operated battery installer. How do you get the batteries in there originally? Oh, fuck! I didn't think of that. Oh, my time-saving device. Like, hey, man, hey, what's up? Oh, dude, I would love to go to the Evanescence concert with you. Oh, dude, they're totally rad. Are you kidding me? No, I've been into them since, like, October. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. When is... Oh, it's tonight? Oh, no way, man. No, I cannot... No. No, I gotta cut some shit out of the paper. Yeah. Yeah, like a recipe for Apple Brown Betty. And a really funny family circus. Yeah. PJ mispronounces spaghetti. Yeah. Yeah. No. And get, no. And he calls what? Puschetti. But that's not it, dude. Listen. No. But he also calls meatballs meat bulbs. I know. That's why it's going on the fridge. Nah, but I can't. I'd love to go. I gotta cut that. Well, when is the show? Oh, dude, that's like in 5 hours from now. There's no way I'm gonna be done. What? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe in a perfect world when somebody invents some electric scissors. But until then, I'll talk to you later. All right. Yeah. Oh, I love Evanescence. They're playing here shortly. You gonna go? Oh no, they're great. Do you not like them? They're not very good, are they? No, they're not very good. They seem kind of phony, manufactured, kind of corporate, shoved out there. Yeah. I don't like any of that fucking POD stain bullshit. I don't creed nonsense. Seriously, it's just that fraudulent shit. You know, that's all the simplistic kind of, you know, 10th grade suburban white girl lyrics, you know, that shouldn't be coming out of, you know, 30-year-old men. That's all I'm saying. So I hate it. It just bothers me. I would rather hear the death rattle of my only child than have to listen to that fucking shit. Yeah, that's serious. That's what I'm saying. I'm not taking this lightly.
And that is comedy from David Cross, and a great take on music. And you can add to his list Nickelback. And if you want to find out why Nickelback sucks, and they do, and they're a terrible band. Artistically speaking, they're a horrible band. Business speaking, I guess they make a lot of profit, but artistically, they are shit. And someone Facebooked me saying, if you want me to tell you sometime why I'm not from a non-Nickelback fan, if you want to tell me why Nickelback are good, email me sometime. So I may take that person up on the offer, because that doesn't make sense. They're not a good band by any sense of anything except making money, and that's not the test in the arts of being successful. I'm sorry. All right. What else can we talk about? I was going to talk about this a few weeks back, but I sort of self-censored myself because I thought, you know, this is probably just a me thing that's so neurotic that it's not worth sharing. But this week, kind of a revelation in that area. How do we broach the topic here? It's pooping, taking a dump, releasing a brown snake into the wild, rolling a cigar, baking some brown bread in the porcelain oven. I don't know, however you want to say it. In any case, a few weeks ago, I started a new gig, and the setup was sort of a not 9-to-5, but 10-to-6-ish type thing, but an office-type scenario. It's at the CBC. In the big building there. So an office building type situation. And it's been a while since I've been in a situation where I've had to, where my home field advantage is taken away. I've always sort of liked and preferred, if I have to do a sit down, doing it in the comfort of my own home, my own bathroom, where everything's quiet, everything's mine. And it's, you know, that's the ideal situation. And it's been many years because with the radio gig, I timed it because it's a shorter shift. I would do all the show prep and everything at home. I would do a lot of writing. Then I would go into the station for the six hours. And then I could come home. So I was in a situation where it was unlikely that I would have to poop somewhere other than my house. But now I'm in this situation, and it's a concern. And I don't know if it's a guy thing, if it's just a guy thing, or females are like that too. I think in general, females, because they're always sitting down, they take better care of the bathrooms. In some bathrooms, not where I'm working right now, but some bathrooms, guys are just like willy-nilly, you know, they'll leave the seat down, piss all over. It's just like, whatever. I don't have to go. I don't have to sit down this time, so I'm going to destroy this place. So the first week I was there, I discovered that the washroom right beside our department is very high traffic, a lot of people in and out of there, and there's a lot of guys, I guess, in this area of the building. So it's just people in and out on a constant basis. So not an ideal situation to have a sit down. So the first couple of days I was there, I made a point of taking a walk around the floor. It's a pretty big floor, and I believe there's about four bathrooms on the floor. And I discovered one down in the HR area where, it's a pretty quiet department, not a lot of stuff down there. And also, theoretically, I think it tends to be more females in that department, so the male traffic in the bathroom, in the men's room there, not so much. So I thought I had found an ideal paradise-like situation, very clean, very quiet washroom where I could do my business in peace. And that's the thing. I have a true neurosis about this, but as soon as someone comes into the bathroom, it's almost like I pause. Whatever I'm doing, I'm like, okay, pause, wait till this person leaves. And the worst-case scenario is when someone comes in and sits right down next to you. And then it's like, oh God, it's bad. There should be rules. If you come into the washroom, there's someone there. Come back in a few minutes, maybe. I don't know. If you have to go, you gotta go, I guess. But so that one was good for about a week and a half, and then I went down there one day, all ready to go, and I opened my stall. There's only two stalls in there. I opened the stall. And the toilet is filled with like a giant explosion of like toilet paper and it's just like it's like disgusting is what I'm saying. Someone who apparently decided they wouldn't flush and would stuff the toilet with their innards and whatever else came out of the hole in their back end. It was just disgusting. And I was like, oh my God. And I went running from there. And then in the back of my head, I'm thinking, oh God, like what if people see me coming to this bathroom regularly, they're going to think, oh, that's the guy who did the thing. But I ran out of there and I thought, okay, I got to discover a new bathroom. This one is ruined. So there's another one that's across the atrium from where I work, same floor. And I thought, oh, maybe this one's good. It's sort of in an area where there's there's radio studios and stuff, so maybe not a lot of traffic, not a huge office. But so I did go there. The first time I was there, it was relatively quiet. But every other time I went since that time, always someone comes in and sits down next to you, and there's always like traffic in and out of there, doors open, boom, boom, boom. So a terrible choice. So this past week, so after a couple of weeks of sort of testing things out, I'm at my desk and I'm getting ready to go and go back to the Old Faithful, the HR area washroom. And there's two other guys in my department, and I kind of they're standing at the balcony overlooking the atrium, and I kind of hear them, and I get the sense they're talking about bathrooms. I'm like, no, it can't be. So I go out there, and what they're doing, and I guess they'd sort of planned it for a while, and I had no conversation with them about bathroom stuff. They're both sort of funny, you know, creative type guys. It turns out they are in the process of trying to find the best men's room in the building. And one of them had already discovered it and was a regular user of the bathroom down by the HR. That was sort of, had nicknamed it the VIP washroom. I was like, oh my God, I thought I was the only, I thought I was the neurotic one just here on my own and with this dilemma of trying to find a bathroom that's clean, quiet, and not well trafficked. But they were about to embark on a search. And the first logic was, okay, maybe in the upper floors. The upper floors of the CBC building, occupied by a lot of television studios and not a ton of offices. So we went up to one of the studio floors, and there's a bathroom there. It didn't seem like there were many people around the area. And so I said to them, you know what, I'm going to go test this one out. I'll meet you back down in the office. You can go explore the other floors or whatever. So I went in and sat down, and I thought, oh, this might be all right. It was a three-staller. Which is unusual. Usually they're just two stallers in the building. And about 40 seconds in, some dude comes in, and rather than going to the stall at the opposite end, so I was in the first stall, and rather than going to the third stall, this guy sits right in the second stall right next to me. That you're breaking like a major washroom code when you don't use the osmosis thing. There's an osmosis that happens in bathrooms in general, specifically men's rooms. It starts with the urinals. If there's three urinals, first guy goes to the far one, second guy goes to the close one, and if there's a third guy in, he'll go to the stalls and take a piss. Because guys, for whatever reason, don't like peeing next to each other. And it's interesting, though, because sometimes You'll have guys who are so paranoid or self-conscious that they'll avoid the urinals altogether and go into the stall and close the door to take their pee. And then you have guys, if you go next to a guy at the urinal, which I'll sometimes do because I'm not totally neurotic about it, but if you're a guy, test this theory out. If you're peeing next to someone at a urinal and you're another dude, I would say 80% of the time that person spits into the urinal. And I'm pretty sure it's just like a some kind of like instinctual man thing where it's like, where it's, I don't know, maybe all guys spit when they go in the urinal, and I just happen to notice that when I'm next to them, they spit. But sometimes you can creep guys out by when you're peeing next to them. Start going, that will make them uncomfortable. In any case, back to the stall thing. When you go to the stalls, really, don't, if you can avoid it, don't take a sit down in the same bathroom as someone else. Give them some space. But anyway, so I go up in the bathroom. Someone sits right next to me, and then there's other traffic in the washroom, and it turns out to be a pretty bad bathroom. It's not very clean either. So so that's that for now. That's as far as we've explored. I think once I'm back in the office, we'll try and find the ideal bathroom. But for now, I think it's back to the VIP, the HR bathroom for my needs. All right. But part of the reason, too, we were thinking that with all the cutbacks at the CBC, there's certain to be some departments that are very low volume, or some maybe some abandoned areas. But I don't know. Yabba yabba. I should mention I'm going to Florida for a week. Yep. Going Tuesday, come back Tuesday. And I've gone for the last couple of years. Last year I actually went for an inordinate amount of time. I was between gigs and had to get out of Calgary. It's too cold and just too lonely. So I went. My parents have a little place in Bonita Springs, Florida. It's between Naples and Fort Myers. And it's not on the beach or anything like that, but there's a pool, and it's a nice little place. So I went there for a month and a half last year, and it gets to be boring because there's so little to do in the specific area they're in. I think it's a little bit older population, a lot of Republican types, and the weirdest thing, this is just in general, I noticed in Florida. There's all sorts of different, I guess here in Ontario, certainly, and in different states, you can get different themed license plates. Here you can get like ones with sports logos or poppies if you're a veteran, or if you like nature, you can get one with a loon. Same deal down there. You see ones with, what the hell are those creatures called? The sea cows. I'm drawing a blank. Oh. It's going to drive me crazy. Oh, I'll just call them sea cows. In any case, you see different license plates with different things on them. But the one that is amazes me, and I researched it. They do have it in other states as well. They're license plates with little kind of kids' faces drawn, like it looks like a kid drawing with little colorful handprints. And it says something along the lines of choose life or something like that. I thought, what? License plates are, it's like a government thing. And they're actually selling license plates that have a very divisive, very controversial issue on a license plate that's issued by the government. And I can guarantee there's no license plates that say pro-choice on them. And it just strikes me as very odd that you could actually have these license plates that are basically a politicized issue, a controversial issue on a license plate that's put out by the government. I understand bumper stickers and that type of thing, but it just seems to me very, very bizarre and very backward to have a state-sponsored license plate that takes the stand of pro-life on the abortion issue. And, of course, being Florida, in a lot of areas... a lot of the fancy pants areas, there's a lot of Republicans, so you do see these license plates all the time, and it just baffles me. So that's the one thing about Florida that I find interesting. But the main thing I love about being down there is just more so than anywhere else in North America, maybe some of the other southeastern states, but it's got a whole... an almost jungle-type wildlife situation. I guess part of it being that a lot of it was sort of reclaimed Everglades and swamp and jungle lands that has been converted into developments. But I don't know what, I'm just such a, maybe a nerd about it, but I love the fact that you're walking around and you see all these little lizards, just tiny little ones, maybe 3 inches long, but they're all over the place. It's like seeing ants here. You see them sunning on trees or on the road, and as you walk along, they all scatter off into the trees. But it's just amazing seeing all these little reptiles. And the truly amazing thing is seeing basically these prehistoric beasts, these alligators, all over the place. Just you know, you're driving past a pond on the way to your house, and you'll see, a 12-foot alligator just sunning himself on the side of the pond, and it just strikes me as amazing. Like, it's just, you don't find that elsewhere, where there's these huge ancient creatures right in front of you. I'm just like fascinated by alligators, and I think it's a guy thing too. It's not just alligators. Great white sharks, I love. Giant snakes. I guess anything that can kind of kill you in nature that's like an animal or a fish or a mammal that can kill you. I'm fascinated by it. I would love to go out and observe great whites breaching in the wild or something like that. But the alligators also have a real fascination for me, and especially when you know there's like there's very few alligator deaths reported, but it does happen. And I always want to get close and see them in closer proximity. So I'm always riding my bike around our neighborhood. And there's different ponds and stuff, I'll see an alligator there, and I'll just kind of watch it. And I remember reading a local newspaper article about a nature trail called it's a conservation area, and they have a 15-mile trail that winds through the Everglades, and you can rent bikes there, or you can walk it. And in the article, it mentioned you see lots of alligators and lots of birds and wildlife, and occasionally there'll be an alligator by the side of the path. I'm like, wow, that sounds cool. In most cases, when I've seen alligators in the past, as soon as you get within, 10 or 20 feet, they scurry off into the water. They're pretty fearful of humans, unless they've been fed by humans. But I thought, oh, this sounds kind of cool. Maybe seeing some alligators in their natural habitat, and it'd be kind of fun to just take a ride. So my friend Demi and I took the hour and a half, 2 hour drive to the middle of the Everglades along the Gator Alley is what they call the main road or highway that cuts through the Everglades. And on the way along the road, I kept looking over. There's a river that kind of I can't really call it a river. It's probably about 15 feet wide and kind of swampy that runs alongside the road. And I kept looking over and kept seeing these black, kind of tarry looking things. And then as we kind of slowed down a little bit, I was like, wow, those are like alligators. Like probably every 50 feet, there was an alligator along the side of the road, which it's pretty amazing, because you consider that for a while, alligators were on the endangered species list, and there was a risk of them, getting to pretty dangerous levels close to extinction. And now there's millions and millions of alligators in Florida, and I would guess in the Everglades, from what I saw there, probably 100 for every square kilometer. Maybe that's, let's say between 50 and 100, because my math isn't great. In any case, so that was kind of cool. And then we're driving up the driveway into this conservation area, and right beside the side of the road, like right on the shoulder, there's an alligator just sitting there sunning. And I was like, wow, look at this. We got a picture of him from the passenger window. And I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. But once we got in there, we rented bicycles, and they were these old bicycles, like old bad bicycles, not geared or anything like that. And we started our ride, and right away, the first pond on the ride, it's sort of where the information booth and all that stuff is. So it's still a fairly, it's not really a remote area, but there's a whole bunch of little alligators, 4 feet, 5 feet alligators, just sunning themselves on the bank within like 3 feet of the path. And as we would soon discover as we rode along, about every 50 feet along the path, there were alligators, not just at the side of the path, but I'll describe the path. It looks a bit like it's like a road, so maybe 15 feet across, asphalt. But these alligators would be out like sunning about 3 feet onto the path. So you would ride your bicycle, you'd be riding within like 2 feet of the mouth of an alligator. But the interesting thing is they were incredibly docile. They just kind of sunned, and I guess from having so many people pass through there, they were totally not oblivious, but they didn't really care about you driving by on your bike or anything. It was just such an amazing thing to get used to, that wow, here are these 12-foot alligators. I'm riding by on my bicycle within like 3 feet, and they're just kind of sitting there. We took a bunch of pictures. The one time I got off and I went to stand next to one, got a little too, I was within like maybe 2 or 3 feet standing beside him. But then I guess I got a little too close because he was like, but it was more deep and like guttural. I was like, okay, I think we're too close. I will post some pictures at joshholidayshow.com to give you an illustration, because with the visual stuff, it helps to have a visual guide. All right, I had other stuff to talk about, but I'm fresh out of time. So I will say, please check out the other episodes if you haven't yet, joshholidayshow.com. And you can also go to the iTunes and please subscribe. For whatever reason on there, your show gets special attention the more subscribers it has. So you don't have to listen to them all, but just click on that subscribe button and it'll come straight to your machine. You don't have to worry about it anymore. And I just want to thank TalkRadioX.com as well for hosting the show. Sunday nights at 9 is when it debuts on TalkRadioX.com. Have yourself a great week. Goodbye.